In his essay, Distance and Relation, the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber describes humans as animals that create images. We use the environment around us. We stand at a distance from things, and we use it like other life forms to provide our food, our shelter. We create tools to help us survive. And then we do something that does not have anything directly to do with physical survival. We move into relation, into relationship with the world by creating paintings, sculptures, and photography. We draw on cave walls, creating pictures that have no utilitarian purpose. Over the centuries, religions have made use of images. There is the Hindu goddess of wealth, love, prosperity, and the embodiment of beauty. She is the wife of Vishnu. Images of the Buddha appear throughout Asia. Jews have a rule against graven images. However, there are many illuminated Jewish manuscripts, such as the Haggadah. Muslims strictly forbid representing images of Muhammad, so there are no images of the Prophet. Instead, there are elaborate designs in buildings and in prayer carpets. Images flourish in Christian worship spaces, such as the ornate 13th century Gothic chapel in Paris, with stained glass windows and biblical scenes. However, some images of Jesus people find less inspiring. In reaction to the excesses of paintings in the Christian tradition, the Puritans decided to err on the plain side, the simple side. Because Unitarian Universalists came out of the Puritan tradition, at the beginning, this was also our style of worship. No images in the sanctuary. Gradually, however, Unitarians added images. In the 19th century and early 20th century, some Unitarians and Universalist churches included great works of art in their sanctuaries. For example, behind the pulpit in New Bedford is a large Tiffany mosaic. Small pieces of colored glass show an image of a pilgrim with an image of an angel behind him wandering in the wilderness. The Baltimore Unitarian Church has a mosaic of Jesus and his followers at the Last Supper. Built in 1818, the church is recognized as the finest American example of French Romantic classicism. The third example of Unitarian Universalist religious art is a stained glass showing the birth of Jesus in the sanctuary of the Fairhaven, Massachusetts Unitarian Universalist Church. And a fourth example of images in worship was the Charles Street Meeting House. The church is now gone, but in the 1950s, the Unitarian minister, Ken Patton, and Ken never liked to be called Reverend. He rejected that as a title that set him apart from the congregation. So Ken Patton painted an image of the Andromeda Galaxy in the sanctuary of this Universalist church in Boston. Ken, writing in the 1950s, said, "Each person is left to make his own interpretation of this reality. He can say, the heavens declare the glory of God, or the heavens declare the glory, or he can just say, my heavens. Well, whether a painted image of a galaxy or a painted image of a biblical scene, a religious painting creates an idealized picture of life. By using light and color in a worship space, the goal is to give people a feeling of the sacred, the transcendent. Paintings and stained glass create a calm sanctuary of peace, a feeling of love in a busy, stress-filled world. But then photography was invented. Instead of the imaginary world of a painting, a photo captures a moment of reality, freezing life for a split second of time. The oldest surviving photograph was created in France in about 1826 or 1827. And by 1839, the first practical photographic process was announced at a meeting of the French Academy of Sciences. But for the first 150 years of photography, it did not play a significant role in worship. I remember in 1980 watching a colleague, a minister, illustrate a sermon using a slide projector. It was sad and pathetic. After the service, another colleague whispered to me that as preachers, our skill is in words and not in photography. When this sanctuary was built in 1962, it was designed with no thought to screens or photography. This was a room built for sermons. But then around the turn of the century, the nature of worship in many churches changed. I started to hear that traditional Christian churches were adding big screens to their sanctuaries. And at first, it was a point of pride among Unitarian Universalist congregations that we were not like the praise and worship evangelical Christians who put the words of their hymns on big projection screens without the music. I mean, how can you sing a hymn without the music? Unitarian Universalists, we have good taste. We were not going to join the projection screen fad. However, we started to notice that the churches with screens were attracting thousands of people. Two colleagues, Wayne Arneson and Kathleen Rollins, wrote, "There is a gap between what our Unitarian Universalist congregations offer in worship and what is rapidly becoming standard in the larger Protestant culture. We worry about what this gap will mean for us as the 21st century unfolds. Worship is not the only engine that drives the health of a church, but without compelling worship that moves people towards lives of wholeness, service, and joy, we will become a slowly dying artifact of a past era." And a church consultant wrote in 2005, "Most of the baby boomers born in the 1950s and later have been reared in a culture in which the projected visual images on motion picture, television, and computer screens are watched more hours per day than are the words printed in black ink on white paper. The preachers," he wrote, of 1955 were expected to excel as wordsmiths. The demand today, in 2005, is for ministers who excel as image smiths. Well, as the price of digital photography, digital scanners, image websites, and digital projectors all dropped, amateurs gained access to many of the same techniques that professional photographers use. Yet part of me was still reluctant to use photography in worship. Perhaps I had officiated at too many weddings. Some wedding photographers are notoriously pushy and domineering. With their cameras, they feel empowered to give orders and go anywhere. Sometimes they aggressively control the whole experience, telling us where to stand and dictating the expression on our face. Once, as I officiated at a wedding ceremony, a photographer dressed in blue jeans, a t-shirt, and tennis shoes stepped between me and the couple to photograph the groom putting the ring on the bride's finger. I leaned over and I whispered, "Return to your seat or I will break your camera." At moments like this, I agree with the Hopi and the Amish. In the summer of 2012, I visited a Hopi village in northeastern Arizona. Years ago, the photographer Ansel Adams took photos of the village, but today the Hopi do not allow any photography of their villages or their religious rituals. They consider photography an invasion of privacy. And in the same way, Amish leaders discourage their members from posing for face-on photos. In a communal society that values humility, posing for photos is a sign of pride that calls attention to oneself and rubs against Amish beliefs about modesty. I think they have a point. I also worry about the tendency to focus so much on the photo taking that we miss the experience. Instead of living life, we become hoarders of images. Instead of enjoying the moment, we focus on the gathering of images of the experience. We surround ourselves with a protective collection of photos and indulge in memories of bygone feelings and experiences. The pictures are now better than the real thing. The image is superior to the actual experience. Because I see this tendency in myself, some days when I go out into the world, I intentionally do not take a camera with me. But photography, like all art forms, is basically a positive endeavor. A photo is an artifact, capturing a moment that's gone forever. A moment impossible to reproduce. It provides proof that something has existed. It may not be better than 1,000 words, but that depends on the picture and the words. I take pictures to discover what is known as beauty. And in this, I am not alone. Few people say, "Isn't that ugly? I must take a picture of it." Most of us search for beauty. People seek scale, harmony, and proportion. Framing is important, lighting is important, and the subject is important. For me, a beautiful photograph often has two elements, austerity and tenderness. The occasion in this photo was the installation last May of a ministerial couple at our partner church, the Unitarian Church in Koron, Transylvania. The Transylvanian photographer is standing at the north door of the church. The image captures both the austerity of the exterior walls of this church built around 1450 and the warm tenderness of the gathering of the worshiping religious community. Sometimes the value of a photograph is in the unique perspective that it can give us. So I took this picture of our partner church steeple while lying on my back in the grass. The Transylvania Unitarians thought I was a crazy American. But I was trying to capture the lines of the tower in a unique and exciting angle. To frame that special picture of which all photographers dream. Sometimes the beauty of a photo is in the joy of a human face. In May, I took this photo of the daughter of our partner church ministers. She's walking on a hill overlooking the Transylvania village. Ansel Adams wrote, "A great photograph is one that fully expresses what one feels in the deepest sense about what is being photographed." It's a high standard that he sets. Looking at this image, I invite you to use your imagination. Imagine the cool air against your skin, the smell of the grass and the trees, and the faint sound of cowbells in the distance. But what about photography in worship? In 2006, I finally visited a Christian church and saw screens using pictures in worship. The static images of paintings in the traditional worship have been replaced by this dynamic, changing photography, some moving pictures, often still pictures, and words on the screens that replace the hymnals. The room was filled with people, and I realized that the world was changing once again, and I would need to learn a new skill. I wondered, how can photography comfort and inspire Unitarian Universalists? We come to church Sunday with the hope that we will find not a conservative dogma, but liberal religious support from the music, from the words, and from the community. In the past, the paintings and the stained glass contributed to this comfort and inspiration. In the 21st century, what photos are best for our worship? Each week, I think about you. I think about the issues in your lives, health issues, relationship issues, work issues. I think about the good news you share with me, the stories about weddings, about your new job, about a family gathering, about an enjoyable trip. I try to imagine what words, what hymns, and now what images you might find inspiring. Of course, as rational Unitarian Universalists, my guess is that you are inspired by the amazing photos of the night sky. So I remember the great humanist universalist minister Ken Patton. Look at this image. As Ken said 50 years ago, each of us is left to make our own interpretation of this reality. You can say, the heavens declare the glory of God. Or you can say, the heavens declare the glory. Or you can just say, my heavens. When I try to imagine what images you might find inspiring, I also think of flowers, whether on a hillside in Transylvania or in a pond in Florida. What a wonderful device a camera is that we can capture an image of a flower, and then we can make that image large and include it in our worship service on Sunday morning. We can use the environment around us, as other life forms do, to provide us food and shelter. We can create tools to help us survive. But then we do something that does not have anything directly to do with physical survival. We create paintings. We create sculptures. We create marvelous music. We create stained glass windows. And we create photography. The camera is a tool like the pen or the brush or the piano. We are animals that use this tool to create amazing images. We are the meaning makers. We make our life a work of art. A colleague has written, each of us is an artist whose task is to shape life into some semblance of the pattern we dream about. The molding is not of self alone, but of shared tomorrow and times we shall never see. The materials are very precious and perishable.